From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Yvonne Crumry. The Alaska House Representative is scheduled to debate the state budget this week. One of the biggest differences over the budget is not over dollars and cents, it's over what name to call the money that will be sent to Alaskans later this year. As KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports, the disagreement is over the message lawmakers want to send.
This year's budget is unlike any the legislature has debated since the price of oil fell in 2014. Oil prices are back up, and so is state revenue. That allows for some big-ticket spending proposals. And under both Governor Mike Dunleavy's budget proposal and the one the House Finance Committee passed last week, Alaskans would receive more than $2,500 in payments from the state. Dunleavy says that's the amount permanent fund dividends should be this year. Members of the House Majority Caucus have proposed a dividend half that size. They're calling the other half of the payment an energy relief check. Palmer Republican Representative Delana Johnson sponsored a budget amendment that would have paid the entire amount as dividends, which she said is closer to the current formula. She says the legislature comes up with excuses each year to not follow the formula.
We can say the stock market is volatile. We can say all kinds of what-ifs as why we don't want to pay it. But the fact is we have a statute. We've struggled with the statute. We've talked about the statute. I mean, this has brought the legislature to a standstill over the last 4 years.
Anchorage Democratic Representative Andy Josephson is a member of the majority. He opposed the amendment.
My main problem with this is that it fundamentally says, let's forget the lessons of 2014 to 2021, as if that part of history didn't happen.
During those years, paying larger dividends would have required some combination of spending cuts, new taxes, or larger draws from state savings. So Josephson is concerned with the message describing the entire $2,500 payment as a dividend would send, that it would set up Alaskans' expectations that dividends would be that size every year. Nikiski Republican Representative Ben Carpenter supported the amendment. He says setting PFDs at the lower amount also would send a message that the legislature wants to spend more of the annual draw from the permanent fund on government.
We're communicating our intention to do something with the permanent fund earnings.
The two proposals also reflect a split over the formula setting the dividend amount, which hasn't been followed since 2015. Neither proposal would follow the current formula, which would pay a dividend of roughly $4,200. Anchorage Republican Representative Sarah Rasmussen predicts that Alaskans will understand the payments they receive this year as dividends, regardless of what they're called.
I don't think that because we're calling it something different, the public will recognize that this is two separate payments. We can speak about it, but the majority of the public doesn't tune into the news regularly, I don't think.
She compared the energy relief check proposal to similar payments the state paid in 2008. She says that as long as Alaskans receive the money at the same time, it will appear to be a PFD. Fairbanks Democratic Representative Adam Wold disagrees. He says the 2008 payments did not set up public expectations that dividends would be higher from then on, in part because the state government said it was responding to high energy prices. And he says that can happen again.
It definitely was noted as a separate amount due to high oil, and I'd like to keep it that way.
Fairbanks Republican Representative Bart Laban also says he's concerned about the precedent of calling the entire payment a dividend.
I mean, it wasn't too many months ago in this building, we were talking broad-based tax like it was something that had to happen sooner than later. And the only question to be answered is, was it a sales or an income?
Laban says the talk of taxes stopped this year, but he predicts it could come back in the future if the state continues to pay higher dividends. The House Finance Committee failed to adopt the amendment, which means that half of the payment is still called an energy relief check. The timing over when the budget debate will begin is uncertain. On Monday and Tuesday, the House did not hold a full floor session after some members refused to wear face masks. House Speaker Louise Stutes reinstituted a mask requirement after at least one representative and multiple staff members tested positive for COVID-19. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
A subsistence fishing method that has become more popular with sockeye harvesters in Sitka in recent years is now banned. The Alaska Board of Fisheries last week prohibited the use of spear guns in the Redoubt Lake Management Area. Proponents of the ban argued that spearfishing was inefficient, dangerous, and disruptive to schooling sockeye, and likely illegal in any case. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The Redoubt Lake Falls are about a 15-mile skiff ride from Sitka. The Forest Service fertilizes the lake every year, and the sockeye run there typically produces large numbers of fish that are a bit bigger than their cousins at Necker Bay and Clag Bay, both of which are farther away and more challenging to reach. Dip netting in the falls and snagging in the bay are the most common techniques for subsistence harvesters, but over the past few years, more people have been putting on wetsuits and snorkels and fishing at the base of the falls with spear guns. Sitka's Fish and Game Advisory Committee voted on dozens of management proposals last fall in preparation for the Alaska Board of Fisheries meeting this March in Anchorage, but it did not vote on the proposed spearfishing ban. Committee Chair Heather Bauscher explained the situation to the board.
This was a funny proposal at our meeting because the folks that have been involved in this emerging spear fishery for the sockeye kind of showed up in force because there's been people doing this for years and it's been growing. And so all these folks came up and gave a whole bunch of testimony about it, and we had this long conversation trying to figure out how to draw lines to allow them some sort of space until we realized that actually it wasn't legal. And part of what was not legal about it is you could do the spear from the shore, but you couldn't be submerged in the water with the spear.
Bauscher is correct. A spear is legal gear for subsistence, provided you use it from shore. Proposal 132 presumably would ban the use of a spear by an individual who is immersed. Being immersed anywhere in the frigid waters of Alaska means using dive gear. Troy Tydinko, acting regional sport fish manager for ADF&G, suggested that connecting these dots meant that spearfishing, the underwater activity, was already prohibited.
Although spear is listed as a legal gear type, and presumably dive gear is listed as legal gear type in subsistence regulations. The readout management plan only lists spear and not dive gear. So spear is a legal gear type. However, dive gear is not, which would mean that being submerged and using specifically gear snorkel gear, like mask snorkel, would not be legal in the subsistence fishery.
The Board of Fish struggled a bit to clarify what it was being asked to regulate. Board member Israel Payton sympathized with the proposer, Sitkin Floyd Tompkins, who wrote that divers disrupted schools of sockeye as they prepared to head into the falls and were essentially entering and exiting the water with a loaded weapon in close proximity to fishermen on shore. Payton recounted his own experience dip netting for salmon near Homer with a spear fisherman in the water.
It was disruptive to all the other dip netters and snaggers in the area, and it's not an efficient means to harvest these fish. So I don't know how it's going to shake out, but I would like to not see this happen at all. I'm for banning people swimming underwater by any means, harvesting a fish and kind of disrupting traditional means of harvesting fish.
Member John Wood was less sympathetic. He believed that sorting out user conflict wasn't in the board's purview.
In this particular case, yes, disruptive, but I don't know that we have the responsibility of making sure that the grounds are peaceful. So I'm having trouble supporting it. I understand the sentiment.
But board member Mackenzie Mitchell did see the proposal as a way of managing user conflict and preserving traditional access to the fish. While she wasn't anti-spearfishing, she did want divers out of the way of other harvesters.
My intent with this would be you cannot disrupt, an area where people are dip netting, or that would be the way that I would look at it, is that boats and dip netters and snaggers have the right of way to that access, and someone diving with a spear gun would have to find an area where they are not in conflict with other users.
Proposal 132, banning spearfishing for sockeye at Redoubt Falls while immersed in the water, passed 4-2, with board members Jensen and Wood opposed. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
This is KTOO.